Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is nuclear physicist and author Dr. Leon Yang. Dr. Yang will be sharing his journey from an atheist to a believer. Dr. Yang's groundbreaking twin universe theory, released in a poetic memoir, From Newton, Einstein to God, unites science and religion to prove God's existence. Good morning, Dr. Yang. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Johnny, I really appreciate. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to yourself, obviously, and to your listeners as well. Thank you.
It is a pleasure to have you on the air. From Newton, Einstein to God is a riveting read. It really engages the very essence of human nature about survival, endurance, and love, and best of all, obviously, is put in a poetic format. So congratulations for that.
Thank you. And just to note, I actually won the best memoir 2015 a couple of months ago. So obviously, I'm very pleased with how it's going and the reception in the marketplace with the book. Thank you.
Fantastic. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, obviously, I'm a bit of a mutt, citizen of the world. I was born in Asia, in Singapore. My family emigrated to UK when I was 6 years old, and I spent most of my youth life, education, and nurturing mode of my life in the UK. And then I moved to the US in 93. So I've extended my life experience through three major continents. This journey has been, the book that's covering this journey is not about just an outward journey for me physically, but also an inward journey spiritually for me as well.
Fantastic. What did spirituality mean to you when you were growing up?
Well, when I was very, very young, I used to have what I term as a dream child. I could actually prophesy future events through dream. I think a lot of people potentially have this gift. Of course, to me, when we're very young, you just accept that natural gift. You thought everyone had it. So I didn't find that as anything extraordinary. It was only when I grew up and I tried to abuse that gift, to be honest with you, that I lost that spirituality with nature, with the cosmos. But at that point, I went into science. And to me, I fell in love with science. And then I lost my spirituality. That's the phase in my life where I was an atheist, where I thought science would prove everything. And we didn't need spirituality. We did not need God. So in a way, it's been a full circle for me in that sense that I've now come to that realization that we do need a God, that God is important in the moral control of my life. And the strange paradox is the science that I used to deny God is exactly the science that I'm now going to use to prove the existence of God.
Very interesting. You and I kind of share certain heritage together because I was originally from Malaysia and you're from Singapore. Besides food and other cultural similarity, one of the things that I think, and you mentioned this in your book, the fact that our parents are very spiritual people. They have this innate respect for the various religious discipline and that they teach us as children to be respective of these religions.
Yes, that's very, very important. As you know, I mean, we got talking earlier before this radio came on, and we have so much in common in terms of our heritage. You're from Malaysia, I'm from Singapore. We both are obsessed with food, and luckily Malaysia and Singapore have the best cuisine in the world. I may upset a few people there, but now talking about food made me hungry now. But obviously, on the spiritual side of things, absolutely. Obviously, Asia, the nature, you know, obviously, there's a lot of religion, spirituality in Asia, as you know, whether it's Buddhism, whether it's Taoism, whether it's Hinduism, a lot of the Asian way of life is through one with nature, through the spirituality essence of it. And again, obviously speaking from kinship between Malaysia and Singapore, obviously in Singapore, predominantly the Asian society that we're brought up with, were Taoist or Buddhism. So we were very respectful. In a way, my mother's comment was always respect all religion, because you don't want to bet any god, you know, whichever god it is. And as you know, in Singapore, a lot of the religion are in harmonious with each other. In fact, book, as I was researching it, I found that a lot of the temples, the worship place in Singapore, and probably in Singapore and Malaysia as well, shares the same temple will have different denominations, different religion using at different times. To me, that is the way it should be between religion. And regrettably, in this tumultuous, chaotic existence that we have, there's a bit too much, not too much, there is this abusiveness of religion, in the sense that a lot of religion believe in the same one god, but then they butcher each other based on the fact that their god has a different name or different, you know, book thing, and that is obviously totally wrong. And I believe that is something that we as true religious believers need to stand up and be counted and be heard, saying that, listen, God in the purest essence is God for everyone. There is only one God, no matter which God label names you want to put it. God is morally our controller, and it is important that we should respect the God and spirituality. And that's something which I believe that we're going through a phase of humanity that we're losing touch with the spirituality, with our God, with one with mm-hmm. nature. And we as a human society need to recapture that if we want to evolve and survive. And that's part of my mission goal and why I wrote this book, and all the other things that I'm doing is championing the cause that we do need to get one reacquainted with the true meaning of nature, the true meaning of God. So it's extremely very, very important.
Fantastic. Spirituality is a journey.
Well, obviously, as I mentioned to you, I truly believe that when I was born, I was given the gift of prophecy, but I lost it when I tried to obviously abuse it. And so in my early experience, my connection with nature, with the spirit life came through me in prophetic dreams. And I believe obviously other people claim they have similar experience. But when I was very young, I thought everyone had that gift. So to me, it wasn't an unnatural gift. It was a natural gift. But as I mentioned to you, when I got greedy with the materialistic goal, which happens to all of us when we get, I guess, corrupted by the world around us, by the influence, etc., I lost that gift. But then at that point, it didn't matter to me, because I then went into science and thought that science was the new religion would prove everything. So in that sense, my early experience of spirituality was a natural gift, which I took it for granted, and I tried to abuse it, and I lost it. So now I'm coming full circle, in the sense that I obviously now want to reconnect with that spirituality, with that one with nature. So whether I can achieve that goal through my own inner sense, that I don't know. So as a childhood, I had that spiritual gift, but I didn't really recognize it. And in a way, I saw it abused it. And if you, like anything, try to abuse things, you invariably end up losing the thing that means precious to you. So regrettably, hopefully I will one day, you know, be able to feel that true essence again, and not just be able to express it in an equation. That's something which I need to obviously recapture in my life.
I understand. How the challenges and opportunities presented to you as a teenager living in the UK? Because obviously you kind of grew up in England.
Correct. I mean, obviously I was transported with my family in the 60s to UK. My father, who's actually from Ningpo, China, my mother's from Singapore, where I was born. And we were brought up in a predominantly working class society in England. I lived most of my life in Liverpool, I'm a red Liverpool fan, so just in case, I'm still a devout, Liverpool supporter. But it was tough, I would say, being in a predominantly white society where I was the only non-white kid. So, and obviously it was racism prominent mm-hmm. in that thing. Yes, of course, when you're in a society where you're a standout based on your color, you do get noticed and you do get, some racial abuse. But one thing that I grew up was I never backed down, and that's a character of me, which I believe is done me good. So I love England. So don't get me wrong. I love England. It's part of my life. It's part of my heritage. I do love it. But it's like the world over. You're going to get a few bad apples, no matter where you are. It's not just England, US, it's China, everywhere. There's always going to be some bad apples. But generally, my life experience in England is, I love the country. I love the people there. Mm-hmm. And yes, there were challenges growing up as in a totally white society, in a working class and things that you had to fight for everything. You had to work hard for everything. But again, I believe those kind of challenges had made the kind of person I am, and hopefully a good person that I am, that I cherish everything that I've worked hard for and that is important in my life. And I take it, for the merit that it is, that I had to work for it. So those I won't call challenges. Those are learning experiences. And the UK has been a very important learning experience for me, both spiritually and in my education going forward.
Fantastic. You obviously also are a connoisseur of martial arts. You took several different disciplines. What did martial arts teach you?
Well, obviously, the essence of the martial arts, I believe, teaches you self-confidence. That's number one. In fact, if you read my book, the funny story is I've only ever lost one fight in my entire life, and that was to a girl. So a girl beat me up. I've had several fights, but only once, and a girl beat me up. So I guess I lost my mojo, and my family, my father took me then to begin with a judo thing to maybe toughen me up, I guess. But no, so the beginning may have been, not the best of a reason, but in a way it was a good beginning for me, because it's not just to physically toughen me up, but martial arts is also very important in the purest essence, is that it is also a mental state. It is also and one linked with spirituality as well. A lot of the martial arts is, harmonizing yourself one with nature. As you know, a lot of the Kung Fu style is related to animal form. That's how they teach the fighting form, and seeing how nature interacts with the world. So since martial art is getting into a proper state of mind and spirit, and then your body will naturally flow in a way that can be, let's just say, very efficient at how it moves, how it defends itself. So the martial arts is not, as most people think, it's just go out there and beat people up. That is not the essence of martial arts. Martial art is, in the core of its belief, one about the spirituality, it's linked with nature. And again, it links in, obviously, very, very nicely with the way my approach is now these days with regarding the spirituality and one with nature. So, yeah, and I believe martial arts plays an important role in how I am and how I can discipline my mind, my body, and my soul and be in balance. I'm not saying I'm totally balanced. That I'm not the case. I'm still trying to reach that balance point. But definitely martial arts have disciplined me in being able to train my body, my mind, and soul to be as one.
You were on an internal journey, so to speak.
Yes, yes. Tune with myself and obviously with nature as well.
Wonderful. Why did the sciences become your favorite subjects in school?
Well, obviously, I don't want to sound very stereotypical, because obviously we Asians are either doctors or engineers, but I guess, if you want to stereotype it, then yes. I mean, But saying that, I mean, I do have the love for science, you know, and now I feel, in a way, everything in my life is fated for one reason or another. So it was, I guess, fated for me to fall into that, because science is about discovering the truth. Mm-hmm. And now that I've come to that realization that really, so is religion. Religion, although it's faith-based, is also seeking the truth. So it's just a different side of the coin. So the reason why I fell in love was it is about describing nature. It's about describing. So obviously, that is how I see the world, through my eyes, through my senses. And obviously, when I lost my spirituality, which is what seeing from the inside was, through trying to gain materials to gain from it, I lost the inside senses, you want to call it that, the sixth sense. So going through science, I could use the other five physical senses to experience the world, measure it, observe it. And at that point, as I mentioned to you, I became an atheist. I thought, well, these five senses, all I need to describe everything. But now, in a way, I've come full circle, in the sense those five senses, in a way, have now helped me to discover that there is a true sixth sense, that there is another sense or one connection with nature. And although now I've found this through equations, through experiment, I now realize that now I also have to journey inward, not just outward, but inward to find that spirituality, that feeling, that sixth sense that I used to have when I was a child, which now I've lost. Whether I regain that feeling or not, I don't know. But it's something that the science I've used to, what I used to try to deny, the ultimate truth, which is obviously the essence of God, I've now discovered that ultimate truth. So now that I've discovered it, I also want to feel it. So science, just like the martial art, to me, it was created that I go down these paths because it's holistically made me the person that I am.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. You also had suffered from dyslexia. Did you ever have a chance, I guess, from your perspective, to use your dyslexia from an advantage standpoint of view, because that makes you become more thorough, more acute in the way you do things?
Well, obviously, I mean, some people who are handicapped tend to have better senses in other aspects. So, for example, if you're blind, people tell you you get better hearing sense, is your touch sense, so your other senses are enhanced when you have a certain handicap. So obviously dyslexia is a handicap in the sense that obviously I had linguistic skills lacking of it, you could say. And so did it enhance my other sense? Maybe that's why having a lacking in language skill, maybe I have enhanced my analytical skills, and that's why maybe I was better at the science sense of it, in the sense that my linguistic skill was poor because of my dyslexic handicap, which may have enhanced my analytical skill and made me, you know, be a better scientist, etc. So I don't know, you know, that's just a very suggestive idea. Sure. But in a way, the dyslexia is the plus that I see is that I never, and it's again, it's part of my philosophy, you never let a handicap or disability be an excuse to stop you from doing anything. So I tell people, the one thing that I can set is as a good example is that, yes, if you're a handicap, you just have to work harder. But if you work hard enough, and you dedicate enough, and you have the passion, then you can achieve almost anything in life. And in a way, if you can overcome those handicaps, those things that hindered you, and you can still achieve those goals, then it makes the reward, the achievement, that much, much more sweeter once you accomplish them. So in a way, dyslexia is something which has taught me to never say no, or just, you know, just give up. It's just that whatever handicap, you just have to work harder, you have to be more passionate, more dedicated, but ultimately, if you have your heart set on thing and you have the next to the commitment, you can achieve almost anything in life, and I truly believe in that.
Wonderful. Please share with us your personal experience about how you are no longer an Asian, but rather living your life as a Caucasian. And I got this from reading your memoir. And the reason for asking this question is because there was a time in my life, in a way, I experienced that same feeling simply because of the lengthy time actually spent in the United States prior to going back to Malaysia for the first time visiting my family. And so from that perspective, I sense greater connection, I guess, to your story. I want to get your story because I know you wrote this from a poetic perspective, but I think it's interesting to just share how we feel.
Yeah, because obviously, as I mentioned earlier, I was the only non-white kid brought up in a predominantly white society, working class. And yeah, I had to face racism in that sense. And that sort of made me want to not stand out, want to be a Caucasian, mm-hmm. white kid. So I didn't have to face all this, like I said, the racism only came from a bad few apples, as I mentioned to you. Every society right. has that rotten apple. So, you know, so in a way, I was brought up not wanting to be an Asian, wanting to be like the rest of the kids. We were obviously all white. So that was my first, belief that I did not want to be Asian, that I wanted to mm-hmm. forget about my heritage, my true, ancestry. Because mm-hmm. of where I was brought up. And just like my spirituality, which I lost through greed, I lost my Asianness because of the discrimination that I was receiving. In fact, I had to fight for every thing. But now again, I'm coming full circle again. I'm now, I lived most of my life in a predominantly Western white society, whether the UK mm-hmm. or the US. So in a way now I feel assimilated. I tell people, obviously quite another joke about being called banana, that you're yellow skin, but you're white inside. And yes, in that sense, that's exactly what I am. I may look Chinese, but my mm-hmm. history, my education, my culture is all Western culture. And mm-hmm. yes, I'm predominantly have a white man's mindset. I don't want to sound racist, but that's the kind of mindset I have. But in a way, just like I'm trying to now recapture that speed I have with you, now I'm interested. Now I'm proud of my Chinese heritage. I'm proud of mm-hmm. my ethnicity. And that's something which I want to, like my spirituality, recapture. And that's another reason why I'm going back to Singapore. I've been to Singapore on my Asia side, but mm-hmm. this year, this end of the year, I'm going to go back to Singapore and pay homage to my mother's, who passed away regrettably years ago, pay homage to her. And then next year, I'm going to go to China and pay homage to my father's ancestral home. So again, mm-hmm. like my spirituality, I want to recapture that sense of our pride of being Asian, So to me is very, very important. But it's good for me in the sense that I have a foot in both camps, that I can see the perspective from an eastern side and a western side. And I think that is good for me to, you want to call it, preach, lecture, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. bring harmony to both sides, because especially at this time when there is tension between the US and China, mm-hmm. I think a perspective where you can see both sides and listen to both sides and understand both sides is extremely important. And that is, I believe, again, the fate of why I was brought up, having both the yin, the yang, the east and the west, and that I can understand sure. both sides and hopefully articulate the beauty of both sides and why we need to work together for the survival of us, the human race, irrespective of the color of the skin or the culture that you live in.
Right. So true. One of the things that I've enjoyed over the years is, prior to coming to the United States, I had told one of my counselors at the high school that I went to in Malaysia, when I say counselors, because we are in a school where they have guidance counselors and so forth. And one of the fascinating things that he had shared with me is the fact that he said, when you go to the United States, combine the best of both culture. You're not forgetting who you are, your heritage. But the idea is that to create a third one that has the essence of both culture, And that in itself, the third culture that you have created, is the competitive edge will be totally unique for you. And I kind of had followed that model pretty much. And I think in your process, as you gone through life, as you journeyed through your life, the different experiences that you have encountered, in so many ways, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, had propelled you in that direction as well. And you were able to sort of, like the Buddha says, go through the process of internal, external journey. And somewhere along the line, you found this sort of a personal enlightenment.
Yes, it's your counselor says the right word. I mean, that third culture, I don't really describe the third culture. That third culture to me means be your own self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, absorb the best of both cultures, which obviously mm-hmm. in our case, we follow similar line that we're from Asia and we live most of our young youth and our education, our nurturing through the Western viewpoint. And each culture right. has its good point, each culture has its bad point. And as good beings that hopefully we are, we will absorb the goodness in both culture. And what your counselor described as the third culture is really, to me, it's not really a culture, it's being oneself, mm-hmm. being the man mm-hmm. that you are, and being the man that I am, and hopefully the man that we are the goodness, because we absorb the goodness from both. Obviously, this is not a Disney movie. There's some people who obviously take the badness from both and become downright evil, etc. So hopefully, you know, through our learning process, we absorb mainly just the good side from both, and that has formed the good third culture, the good being that we are today. Mm-hmm. But time will tell, and obviously our action will speak louder than our words in that proof.
So true. So true. When did your fascination with the existence of God come about?
Well, obviously, I believe I was born to that. As I mentioned, I was a dream child, a spirit child, and obviously I try to abuse that. I try to abuse the God gift that's given to me, and I lost it. So whether I'll be able to recapture that feeling, I'm obviously this cold calculating scientist who claims that he's now discovered God and can experimentally prove it. But now I want to feel that essence again, that God. So when you said my fascination with God, I guess I've always had it, in the sense that I had it from birth. But like everything, we were talking earlier about how until, you know, we took our parents for granted, our mothers for granted, and it's only when you lose that preciousness that you realize what you had was so precious and you try to recapture it. So we go a similar path in there. Well, the same mm-hmm. passage with God. I think when I was given that God gift of spirituality and I lost it, I don't know whether you essence can ever recapture it. I hope so. But mm-hmm. that's a story that I want to tell. So that's it's an important story that I want to tell. So in that sense, the fascination with God has always been with me. It's now mm-hmm. I'm going through a phase in my life where I want to recapture, not just prove it, but I hopefully can re-feel that connection with God, that connection with nature. And that's a journey which I'm continuing on.
Very interesting. What was the greatest challenge in coming from Newton, Einstein to God?
Well, obviously, my linguistics, as I mentioned, because of dyslexia, because my language skill is, I mean, your listener may, hopefully, when you listen to me, they say, well, he's a very articulate person, etc. Linguistic skill, but that's not always been the case with me. I mumbled and stumbled with my language learning skills. So, and obviously coming from Asia to English, which was not my first language, that didn't help either. So obviously in writing a book, you've got to have good writing skill. Now, I'm not claiming that Newton is the greatest work since Shakespeare. That's not the case. But hopefully I've impacted enough talent, learning skill into our book, which obviously, as I mentioned earlier, has now won the 2015 Best Memoir Book. Which mm-hmm. obviously I'm very, very pleased. So I believe I've, you know, written a very, very good book in that sense, egotistical, you know, modesty set aside. But the greatest challenge is just in the writing, in the mechanics of it. Like I said, I wasn't born with the greatest linguistic skill. So that's something, but again, that's part of the challenge in life. That's something that hopefully if I can impact on other people who want to listen in and want to gain from my experience that you shouldn't allow handicap, you shouldn't allow difficulty to basically stop you from doing anything. So even though it's the greatest challenge, it's a challenge which I've overcome, I believe anyway, and it's therefore it's given me a lot of satisfaction and a lot of reward in being able to overcome my writing, my linguistic inadequacy, and turning that handicap, you want to call it, and overcoming it and producing hopefully a book that is elegant and hopefully very, very pleasing to read for the for readers. So that is, and hopefully by winning that memoir award, I hopefully have proven that I did manage to overcome that greatest of challenge.
Sure, of course. It's a wonderful book. It's beautifully written. I like it very much, and I strongly recommend people who enjoys reading about the facts of lives, reality stuff. And the most interesting thing is, I know we all have to be models about who we are and so forth, but you are a highly accomplished person in many ways. And I say this with all due respect, you are a highly evolved human being with the things that you've gone through. That brings me to the next question of, was writing this memoir a healing process for you?
Yeah, I mean, I always tell people who have issues in their life, emotional issues, if they're paying for a therapist, I always tell them, write things, because writing is the greatest of therapy, absolutely. Because when you write, in a way, you allow your inhibition to flow out, and you write from your soul, or that's the way I've experienced it. And from a lot of writers that I talk to, they also have this similar experience that when you write, you tend to write the truth. And regrettably, a lot of us don't always express the truth either through what they say or through the expression. But for whatever reason, when you write things, the inhibition goes. So even if you don't publish anything, just write it down, because in a way your heart and soul comes out in your writing. And that to me is one of the greatest of therapeutic advantages of writing. So even if you're not a great gifted writer, you have issues through life, difficulties, I always tell people, get a pen, paper, or go on your computer and write it down. Write it down and then read what you write. Because it's amazing what sometimes comes out. You say, oh, that really is me, and that really is you. So yeah, I found writing to be a very, very healing process as well for me and for a lot of writers. And I would recommend writing as a good way of therapeutic approach for people to take up, absolutely.
Very interesting. Can you explain in the most simplified terms how exactly you have proved God's existence?
That's probably a $64,000 question. Obviously, there's a lot of scientists in the past that claim, well, there's a scientific God, but I'm the first one who claims that it can be experimentally proven. Absolutely. And now, the first thing you have to define is, what do you mean by proof? Scientifically speaking, a proof is when you have a theory. But your theory has to make prediction, and your prediction has to match what experimentally is observed through your eyes, through your senses. It has to match. So my step to God, like everything, you have to walk before you can run. Before you can prove God, you have to prove the twin universe. And I call it arrogant or egotistical, but I claim my discovery of twin universe, which will one day win me the Nobel Prize in physics. I say that it sounds arrogant, but I'm saying this because to me it's an important step of getting that recognition. And my twin universe is the next step before God. Mm-hmm. And the twin universe can be experimentally proven. In fact, I'm the only scientist that I've written scientific paper and calculated what the numeric value of dark energy, for those that follow science, dark energy is the mechanism which explains the acceleration of the universe. And similarly, I'm the only scientist to calculate the right ratio of matter to antimatter, again, those may be complex concepts, but the reason why I'm describing it is I'm the only scientist who actually calculate numeric values which can be matched to experimental data. And right now, my theory of the twin universe is the only one that matches those measurable data. And that is the essence of proof. So once you prove the twin universe, you can then go on to the next stage of proving God. And that is how I describe ultimately what I meant by being an existence of God.
Very, very interesting. We have to talk about some really cool stuff here. And I'm so glad I have you on the air with me. How do your science theories explains other unknowns of the universe? And you mentioned something about dark matter, for example. These are things that, I mean, you have just like lay people like me who enjoys cosmos and all that kind of stuff and really enjoy the fascination of wanting to know more. So if you could share that with us, that'll be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, obviously, there are science is getting to a point where there's many things that it cannot explain. The more it tries to discover, the more it realizes it cannot explain it. So there are, right now, the biggest, in fact, there was a survey, I think it was in Scientific America a couple of years ago, on what the biggest scientific unknown is in science. And one of the things was called dark energy. As I mentioned, dark energy, the scientists cannot explain why our universe is expanding. It's not just expanding, but it's accelerating. And similarly, why our galaxies are rotating as fast as it can. The physics behind those phenomena, current science cannot explain it. Therefore, because it cannot explain it, it uses these terminologies that it calls dark energy and dark matter. It's basically a term that basically means we cannot explain it. So we just call it a dark force, etc. So it's a fascinating thing, not just to scientists, but obviously to everyday people that listen to those kind of explanations, because everyone wants to know about our universe, about nature. So even though you may not be a scientist, a lot of people have heard about these concepts about why our universe is expanding, but why can't we not explain it? And current science cannot explain it. So this is why I've been arrogant and egotistic in saying that I've discovered and developed the theory of the twin universe, which not only explain, but I said to prove something, as I mentioned earlier, to prove something, your theory has to make prediction. And not only make prediction, but it has to calculate values, values that the science can then compare with the measurement. Theory that you put forward matches the experimental data. Then ultimately, the theory becomes law. So if Einstein, for example, Einstein came up with the 100 years ago with the theory of relativity. To begin with, no one could understand it. I mean, there's a lot of people that say they still don't understand relativity. But eventually, it was experimentally proven, and science said, you know what, that theory is correct. It matches what we observe. Mm-hmm. You know, so therefore, it is important not only for science, but also for humanity to discover the truth. And I said earlier, the science and religion are tied into a common search for the truth, for the greater truth. So it's always important. And that's why science have given me this twin universe theory, which allows me to calculate and predict, and more importantly, match the data that we observe in our universe, which, again, allows me to be this arrogant or egotistic to say this twin universe theory is correct. And this twin universe theory is correct. That also leads ultimately to God. So yeah, everyone is fascinated about the universe, about discovering the true meaning of the universe. And I believe in my heart of heart that the twin universe theory is the true description of our existence. And not only because I say so, but because the theory actually calculates numeric values that matches what we observe. And that's the important thing. The word, it matches what we observe in our universe. And that's why I'm so confident that ultimately the twin universe and ultimately God will be experimentally and factually proven.
Very interesting. I read somewhere where in all of us, we have particles of the universe in us. Is that a correct statement, I guess?
Well, obviously, even in science theory, there's a theory called the string theory. It basically said the universe is made up like the musical notes on a guitar, piano, that we're all made up of these harmonics, these strings that vibrate, and depending on the vibrational tones, makes up matter, and ultimately matter makes up of human. So in that sense, it says that we are made up of these strings that vibrate one with nature. In a way, I sort of agree with that, even with my twin universe, because the way my twin universe is evolved is that we humans are on one side of the universe, our identical twin, the other side of the universe, and our identical twin is actually one with this super being, the supercomputer of the universe, this entity that I call God. So in that sense, my twin universe theory is very similar to the string theory and to other, obviously, more spiritual religious, I think, like Buddhism, in the sense that we are one with nature, that we are inherently linked to this universe, you know, in our physicality, in our spirituality. So yes, so there are scientific theories out there, like I mentioned, string theory, that connects us inherently with this natural world. And obviously, if you believe God is part of this natural world, then yes, we are inherently linked intimately to God.
Interesting. Do your religious theories bring God closer to humanity, you think?
I believe is a absolute must. I believe, because even though I believe in God, I also believe in science. I believe in evolution as I believe in creation. So I do believe our universe is 13.7 billion years old. I believe we evolved from chimp-like animals, etc. So even though I'm a God believer, I also believe in science totally. To me, they're both seeking the truth. So if believing evolution, then I believe we evolved from a very primitive state. And in a way, I still believe we are very, very primitive emotionally. So we're like a chimpanzee with a nuclear bomb. So without that moral control, as I said, we mentioned earlier, obviously most of us have our mother and our parents to seek for that moral control. But obviously, regrettably, our mothers can never stay with us all our lives. So I believe humanity requires that motherly consciousness. And that motherly consciousness, to me, is God. So to me, God is a very, very important part of humanity surviving, because it gives us that moral control and the rationale. And without that moral control, we end up with wars, with brutality that you see all around the world. And the insanity is a lot of the claim they're doing it in their name or their God. But to me, those are not true God believers. Those are just wackos, to be honest with you. And they're not true believers. And that's why, in a way, the God that I'm bringing, not just myself, in the sense that it's just fact-based and faith-based. So that duality, that unity between the two, between science and religion, between fact and faith, ultimately will lead to a belief in God that will never be able to be broken. And when people have that true essence, the true belief in a God, then I believe they will be morally controlled and morally do the right thing and not lead down this path of murder, rape, stealing, which they claim they're doing in the name of their God, which is abuse of all things decency. So yes, God is absolutely important for humanity and our survival and continued evolution.
So true. What do you say to people who doubt theory?
Well, as I arrogantly stated, I believe I will win the Nobel Prize in physics. Again, it's not just for my big ego, because obviously I have a message to tell, and that's the real reason why I am this bold going forward with my twin universe. And the reason I'm bold going forward is very simple. I ask people, my theory is on my scientific website, which is twinuniverse.org. So you can check out my scientific papers. It's all published there. It's all freely available. I've been on science conferences. I've shown my theory to my fellow scientists, the equation, and I challenged them. And it is a challenge. Prove me wrong. And right now, the good news is my theory is the only one that says explain a lot of these dark, unknown issues in cosmology, like dark matter, dark energy, missing antimatter. So my theory is the only one that currently explains all these great scientific unknowns, which current scientists cannot explain. So that's why I'm very confident that my theory is actually the correct theory. And for those that say, well, they doubt it, it's very simple. Read my theory, read where I do the calculation, and then prove me wrong if you can. If you cannot prove me wrong, then I'm correct. And that is the simple definition of how you do an experimental proof. I made, for my scientific theory, I made prediction, I made calculation, and it's all readily available for any doubters that want to read it and challenge me. I welcome those doubters. I want them to read it. I want them to, if they can, prove me wrong. Absolutely. I'm available for all challenges, because I obviously am very, very confident that I will ultimately be proven totally right.
Wonderful. How has your life experiences contributed to the man you are today?
Well, it's the journey physically from my life experience from Asia, Europe, America, and obviously spiritually inward, from being a dream child to an atheist to now a God believer. So that has formed the person I am. Good or bad, it's the way I am. I believe fate has put me into this destined position. And obviously, so to me, I am purely the man I am through all my life experience, both through my outward journey and now through my inward journey. And obviously, it's covered in my memoir, that experience. And hopefully the readers will be able to get the essence of the person that I am. But as I mentioned, the messenger, me, is not important. The most important thing is the message. And so for the man that I am, hopefully the most important thing is that I leave a legacy that my mother and humanity will ultimately be proud of. Again, that may sound rather arrogant thing, but really that is my remaining ambition in life, is that I hopefully set an example, again, a legacy that my mother will be proud of, and a legacy that humanity can take and use for the benefit of its survival and its evolution. So yeah, I am the person I am because of all this life experience that I've gone through that we just, you know, obviously covered.
Interesting. And I know you used the word arrogant several times, but I think it's the fact that it's not arrogant. I think it's a level of confidence in knowing that when you do things right, you're actually doing the right thing. And in the essence of doing the right things, you're doing things right. So it is more of that sheer confidence, as one would say, the godly confidence that you have that's been bestowed upon you to share your personal experience with every one of us.
Correct. You obviously, I'm sort of in a way abusing myself and criticizing myself, because obviously sometimes when people hear me with my confidence bonus, they obviously label me as arrogant. So that's not, but I said the messenger is not important. It's the message that's important. Therefore, if you look at me as arrogant, as a bad person, then fine, I'm not the important thing. If you want to prove me wrong, that is what I want you to do. If you're a doubter, excellent. Read my scientific theory. Prove me wrong. Absolutely. The message is the most important thing. So what I call myself, what you want to call me, is all immaterial. It's the message that's the most important thing. So if I can, you know, like I said to you, not treat myself too serious. I treat my message totally serious. So if I can treat myself not seriously, then fine. That I'm not the most important thing. My message is the most important thing.
I understand. Why did you decide to write your memoir in a poetry format?
To me, poetry is the language of love. It literally is the language of love. And I never had formal training in poetry. In fact, again, a lot of things in my life happened for a reason, for fate. And actually, a good friend of mine wanted to start up a writing club. So we started our own private writing club, and she's actually a very, very gifted writer, actually, of poetry. So when she started writing this poetry and I was reading it, I thought, wow, this is so beautiful. And it conveys the information in such an elegant fashion. that you not only read what it, but you can almost feel that the if you write poetry beautifully enough, that's what I'm saying, you can almost feel the words. I mean, I find it hard to describe. That's the best way I can describe it. So in a way, she got me thinking, well, maybe if I really want to get that message out, maybe I want to write it in language love, because ultimately, is our love for God, is our love for humanity that's going to save us. So I think it's fated for me to go down this passage in my life that, you know what, maybe I should attempt to write this in poetry. And hopefully I've done an eloquent enough job so that when people read it, they only not only can read the word, but they can feel the word in through the poetry. And obviously, I'm happy that my book won. Again, I always emphasize, and I'm pitching it, that won the best memoir indie book 2015. So in a way, I have that proof that, yes, there are people out there that do love my and the poetic style of my writing. And hopefully that poetic style will allow people to not only read the message, but also feel the message. And again, the message is the most important thing that I'm trying to convey, not me, the messenger, but the message itself.
So true. Where can someone go to buy the book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, my book is entitled From Newton, Einstein to God. So it's available. You can order from any bookstore, but obviously Amazon.com, the number one book sellers in the world. So anyone around the world can just go on Amazon.com and just type either my name, Leong Ying, or the title of book, From Newton, Einstein to God, and they'll see that that book, and they can order it directly off Amazon. Or like I say, you can order from any bookstore as well. And obviously, if they want to read more about me, obviously they read the book, that will tell them. But if they want to follow my saga, they can visit my personal website, which is limying.com. It's actually my mother's maiden name, which is L-I-M. Then it's my last name, Ying, my father's name, Y-I-N. So limying.com. So again, the duality, the importance of my family, my mother and my father's, and my respect to them. And that they can follow my ongoing history side of it. For those that want to be, that want to challenge my science, or just want to read my science, the scientific, the nerdy nerds that are interested, then my website, twinuniverse.org, is all one word, twinuniverse.org. They can check out my science, they can read the math, and they can, for doubters, for believers, whoever, it's all readily available at those two websites. So Limying is my history, and Twin Universe is my science.
Thank you for that. On the lighter side, and I don't know whether I could say it's a lighter side, but we talk about how you have accomplished so much in your life. Let's talk about the Ironman triathlon. That's an amazing feat. And then let's follow up with the fact that you have ran marathons on seven different continents. So tell that story and that journey.
Yes, it's to me, to be balanced in the, obviously the Eastern philosophy, the yin yang, which deals with the universe, but also with your physical wellness. As you know, our Chinese holistic approach to wellness is that you need both the yin and the yang in balance in your body, the light and the dark qi to gain harmony in your body. And similarly, I feel the holy trinity to our wellness is both our physical, our mental, and our spiritual being. That's the holy trinity. So obviously, my mental is through my education, through learning. My spiritual is obviously my connection with God, my connection with nature. But the physical is that you've got to physically train your body. And one of the important things, especially as you get older, is you've got to exercise. You've got to diet properly and you've got to exercise. And exercising, so obviously the Ironman and the marathons are what people would describe as the hardest challenge physically for most recreational people. So I took upon that challenge through a marathon, because actually I hate running, but I challenged myself. So it's like my dyslexia, whatever you hate or you're handicapped, don't don't let that stop you from doing something. So even though I hate running, I challenge myself to run on 7 continents. So now I've completed that. I run a marathon on all 7 continents, including Antarctica, which I've done twice. And obviously the Ironman is the ultimate challenge of physical endurance, in the sense that you have to swim, bike, and run a marathon at the end of it. So again, I've done that Ironman course. So that's the kind of person I am. That's the kind of challenge that I said, you know what? It is a big challenge, but it's a challenge that, irrespective of my handicap, irrespective of where I don't like running, I have to challenge myself. And I went out there and I proved myself. I ran a marathon on all 7 continents and I completed the ultimate physical endurance, which is the Ironman. So obviously I'm very proud of myself, but that is my physical training of myself. So and that's part of my holistic approach to that holy trinity of well-being, in that you want to be physically, mentally, and spiritually sound, and to gain that complete holistic wellness. And that's something which I think is important, and something that I dedicate my life to achieving is, you know, educating my mind and educating my physicality. And that physicality, I do it through my physical workout, whether it's through the martial arts, through marathon, or through these triathlon. So
fantastic. That sounds really wonderful. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Yes. I mean, you and I enjoy obviously good, delicious food, and we have been blessed in that we come from a nation, Malaysia and Singapore, which obviously we arrogantly say has the best cuisine in the world, and I stand by that. I'm just thinking about Singaporean and Malaysian food is already making me hungry. So like any good food, it's the ingredients of life, like you said, the recipe. So, and that, again, for our living, again, the recipe, the ingredient we put into our life is so important. So I just covered that. Obviously, to me, the Holy Trinity, the most important ingredient of our life is we have to put the right ingredient for the physical side, for the mental side, and the spiritual side. We do need those three essence. And if you mix in that right ingredient into that, just like food, it will become the most delicious tasting experience of one's life. And to me, that is the ultimate recipe of good living, of good life, is that you need to add the right ingredient for all three, the physical side, the mental side, and the spiritual side. I mean, get that right blend, create that dish that is so delicious and so loving and so caring that other people will enjoy it, not just yourself. You will create magic, basically. So yeah, that is my ultimate recipe of life, just like that cooking experience. Get the right ingredient, mix it,
that's
the
fantastic,
right portion, and you will get the right dish, you know.
That's fantastic. Well, Dr. Ying, thank you for the wonderful recipe for living life and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Marie Jogopoulos. She is an intuitive counselor, healer, and spiritual mentor. Marie will be hosting and conducting her bi-weekly Meditation for Moms series. She will be discussing how you can reclaim the real you transformational meditation. Marie will also be talking about her worldwide consciousness movement, Meditation for Moms. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Dr. Ying, it has been a pleasure. Thank you and have a blessed day, sir.
My it's all my pleasure. Thank you very much, Johnny Tan. You've been absolutely amazing to talk to. And thank you again from the deepest part of my heart. I really appreciate it. And I we go along this journey together. Thank you again. And thank you to all your listeners. And God bless you all. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.